Black man, is this the plight? Sisters put you down when the end is still in sight. I'm scared for my future kids, daughter in specific. She gon' learn it all, but she'll hate what is her image. You're young and you're blacker, your head don't need relaxer. You're blacker than the panther, you're louder with your laughter. You're clean and you don't ever have to feel you don't belong. Luther King, Kanyezi, you're my little morning star. Ah. Cash out till I pass out, that's the thing. Racks out so we trap out in the crib. Pass out, we the last out with the ching. Telling Gandalf that I'm coming for my ring. Frodo getting hands if he breathing my way. Hamilton, Bolt Force, Vin Diesel with the rape. Khaleesi getting mad cause I'm sleazy with the slate. And ninjas on the deal trying to pull that stingray. Kidnap the baker, want my bread that's in now.
Welcome back to the Hip Hop African Podcast. We are doing a special series of episodes that are being recorded live with African Studies students from Howard University and George Washington University. We are teaming up for this series with Words, Beats, and Life, which is also live streaming the episodes on Wednesday evenings on their Facebook page at facebook.com/WordsBeatsLife. You can find the full schedule on our site, hiphopafrican.com.
So we got a lot of people here in the virtual space, here in Zoom, Facebook, in the wider World Wide Web. Hello, my name is Mikal Amin, hip-hop artist, curator, cultural ambassador, but I'm also an associate editor for Words, Beats, and Life, who is a co-sponsor for this amazing, amazing interview that we're about to have. We are live and direct in the Hip Hop in Africa course, headed by Dr. Messiah Kabona Clark, who is going to be interviewing the artist that we have here today. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually wait and take questions after the interview, some from Dr. Clark's class, but also from those of you out there in Facebook. So chat on so in the comments, in the chat, leave some questions and we're gonna hopefully get to as many questions as we can, as well as some of the individuals here that are in live in the Zoom right now. We'll try to get some of those questions, but we're definitely going to have some questions directly from Dr. Clark's class first. Now, who we're about to hear from is part of the Born Free generation. Gigi LeMain grew up in Johannesburg, South Africa after the fall of apartheid. She graduated from Wits University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in media and anthropology in the midst of the Fees Must Fall movement. Definitely sounds like the student loan debt situation we got in the United States. That's a whole nother thing though. Rapping since high school, she released the powerful track Fees Will Fall just months after graduation. Considered one of South Africa's illest lyricists, her music addresses topics like Black pride, gender-based violence, feminism, sexism, and the shadiness within the music industry. And today we're going to have a very dope, powerful, intimate chat with one of these amazing global hip-hop artists, Gigi LeMain. So with all of that said, I also want to pass it off to my colleague, Dr. Clark, and let's get it going.
Thank you, Mikal, and definitely thank you, Words, Beats, and Life, for, you know, co-hosting this. I'm super excited. The last time I spoke to Gigi was in 2017. So I know a lot has happened, and I've, you know, been a fan for a very, very long time. And you know, I know that just kind of over the years listening to your music, and I think I may have even said this in the first interview, but one of the things that is interesting to me, has always been interesting, is that, you know, again, and in the bio, one of the things I had actually wanted him to mention is, you know, you definitely are considered one of the best lyricists in South Africa. Like, I think it's, you know, that's definite. That's definitely out there. And I also think that when you listen to some of your songs that kind of are literally focused mostly on bars, I mean, songs like, what is it? Roll, Gigi the Great, like some of your freestyle songs. But then next to that, you've got other songs that have a lot of depth. So you've got some songs, some artists that kind of produce those obligatory kind of, you know, stop the violence type tracks, but I feel like your songs go a little bit deeper. So you've got the Fees Will Fall, which of course came out of the Fees Must Fall movement, But then you've got the tribute to Winnie Mandela. You've got other songs that deal with kind of the perceptions of beauty among Black girls. You reference the Black Panthers in your music. You talk about Black consciousness, racism. You deal with a lot of stuff on a deeper level other than kind of this surface level. So I guess one of my questions is, given kind of your commercial success, because you've also kind of won awards and you definitely have this presence in the commercial system in South Africa, why do you feel it's still so important to make these statements, especially given the fact that some commercial artists may feel it hurts their career to go conscious?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It's like midnight here, but I'm gonna try and be like super woke, super awake. I think for me, it's always been that the Born Free was always expected to rebel against the system, because we weren't necessarily, you know, we didn't experience it, but we definitely, you know, experienced the aftermath of it. I think as a result, I mean, with a lot of us that were marching, you know, at the Fees Must Fall protests, it was almost a conversation we had about how we were all going to spread out into various facets of society and make sure that, you know, what other people deem millennials now, you know, are future leaders. So we almost popularized being rebellious. And it just kind of like became a thing. So as much as I became a hip hop artist and Buyiseni Ndlozi became part of our, you know, one of our main opposition parties, we have, you know, activists who are in the acting space. And I think we just, it's cool. It's cool to be somebody who speaks up. And I think right now, it's crazy that we're even having this conversation, because something super imperative is happening in South Africa where we're having a shift for young people. Young people are almost creating a revolution, you know, against the older generation and wanting them to step down so that we can, you know, come in and rule with the different energy. You know, we believe that our parents are a little scarred by apartheid, as we will put it. And, you know, we're coming through with different ideas. And that's exactly what we're doing. It's crazy at how I can, you know, do a party song like a Fufa that will reach like 2 million views in like a month or whatever it is, and then do Fees Must Fall and not be afraid that government might just do something. It's really different in the sense that government feels like, you know, it's actually, this is somebody to sit down with. I've been involved in various campaigns, the United Nations, the Global Goals campaign, particularly focusing on young girls. But it's a good thing to speak up, I guess, in South Africa. It's just in how you speak up that matters. I think it's more about whether it's constructive or destructive. I mean, we have had people silenced for it, but I think I've always tried to approach it in a constructive way. And I think that's why I can sit around the table with the president and open for him, have a conversation with him, still drop a song. And, you know, from the last time we spoke 11 awards down the line, I'm still, you know, a very respected young person in my 20s doing what I'm doing.
You spoke at, was it a campaign rally for Ramaphosa?
Yeah, exactly. So Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa. It's crazy because I was the first, I was the first female rapper on the continent to ever even open, you know, for a president. I was also the youngest there, and, you know, yeah, it's amazing. It's not every day that you get to meet the president of your country. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So speaking of female, being female, so one of the things that I absolutely adore or love and kind of, you know, kind of live for your music is that, like, you refer to yourself as a feminist very early on. And I think your music is definitely, you know, the elements of feminism, even if you're not necessarily in every song declaring I'm a feminist, I definitely feel like really reinforce certain principles. whether it's kind of gender equity or just kind of women being comfortable in who they are, women not being shamed for who they are, especially, you know, women kind of being body shamed, you know, being shamed for their sexuality, all of these things. And so one of the things that I'm interested in is because you have been very, I feel like even with the music, the songs that talk about issues, very personal about a lot of your music, and you've talked a lot about yourself, and you've kind of really, I felt like, opened yourself up a lot in your music and talked a lot about your own life, your own experiences. But you've also kind of been like, I'm a woman. I'm going to celebrate being a woman. This is what a woman looks like. And so do you feel that people, because I know that sometimes older generations of feminists can kind of, the respectability politics. Do you think that, or do you feel that those, there are those who maybe will try to take that feminist card from you or try to say that you are somehow dishonoring that because of those things?
I honestly feel like with everything I've ever done in the name of feminism, it was always about taking my power back in one way or another. You know, from just not being, I mean, we had a situation in the past where there was a woman walking around in a very short skirt in our CBD, in our, you know, central business district in town. And these men started grabbing at her, and their excuse in courts was that she wasn't dressed appropriately. She kind of like provoked them. And I think I, for one, have come in very aggressively. And I've showcased that. I've showcased the idea of stretch marks. We've showcased, and it's not just me. There are a whole lot of, you know, women starting to move like that. But I think we're at a point where we understand that feminism in Africa has to be slightly more aggressive for people to get it. And believe it or not, it's like, you know, I've seen a lot of things that have happened in American politics when it comes to civil society, but nothing is as brutal as the conversation around feminism in Africa, because it's something where, you know, there is culture, and how a young Zulu woman, a young Sotho woman, a young Xhosa woman is expected to behave. And then there is almost this, wow, okay, there's this girl in a very male-dominated industry, you know, like the United States, a very male-dominated industry, and she's saying all sorts of things. Some of these things are provocative. Some of these things are very demanding, and that's not how women, you know, behave. So it's often a very isolated decision you take. It's a lot of agency that you take when you decide to even become a female rapper. The idea of a female rapper is already politicized in itself because it's something that's not expected. Let alone when you decide to do a nude shoot with a snake, for instance, which is something I did recently, portraying, yes, you know, what you guys would say Eve is in the Garden of Eden, but according to folklore, the idea of indonya semanzini, a mermaid in the water, you know, that snakes are not bad as what, you know, Western society has taught us. The idea that when you dream of a snake, it's actually a good omen in the African context. And for me to take that and put it out there, you know, for a society that is slowly becoming a little more Christian or a little more Western, is something very tricky in itself. So, I mean, I do play in very dangerous waters. But I think you get to understand that it is necessary for the younger women after you, for you to be even trying to do something like that, you know? And I think 5 years down the line, being in the industry, I've acquired so much respect. It's quite scary. I wonder how things will look for me when I'm 40. But I think the idea of feminism, as I said, is something like so politicized. Like it's, you know, a feminist in our context is somebody who decides to wear suits and take up a very, you know, male kind of, you know, stance in society, and is you can't be sexy and feminist. It's either one or the other, and you can't be somebody who is cultured and feminist. The minute you're feminist, you have thrown away your culture. You do not respect men. You do not respect anybody. you've just decided to be what some would deem a harlot in biblical terms. So yeah.
And you know what you said about feminism in Africa being aggressive, I feel like with one, the total shutdown in South Africa was the synchronized protests in different cities all over the country where women came out and basically said, no more, we're done, we're tired, like issued a list of demands. And you haven't seen that anywhere else. We have seen protests in Kampala, Nairobi. I mean, there have been other cities, but to see these coordinated protests in multiple cities in one country, we haven't seen that. And so I really think that in South Africa, you've seen the women really go harder than probably anywhere else. But I do think that, yeah, I mean, I do think the things that African feminists are doing online, young women, it's really, yeah, they're unapologetic about it. They are like, no, keep your respectability politics over there. We don't want it. So that's been interesting. So another thing that I know you've talked a lot about is kind of the industries trying to pit women artists against each other. And, you know, I know you, like a lot of artists, hate the term female MC or she's good for a woman MC and, oh, you rap good for a girl. But I also know, like in South Africa, there are so many women in hip hop, like more than any other African country, so many women. And so when you look at, like, you know, you've got yourself, Dope St. Jude, Yugen Black Rock, Kanye Mavi, Nadia Nakai. I mean, there's just so many women. And even now, like, Miss Super is coming back doing stuff. Miss Ntabi's, like, been doing stuff. Like, all, and, like, so it's, like, women who were kind of, like, quiet for a while are now coming back. Do you think that the presence of so many women, is that impacting the industry's ability to pit people against each other? Or is that still something that you feel, is it successful? Is it working? Like, what's the situation there in South Africa?
I think because a lot of, we've seen a rise or an influx in a lot of women coming into the industry, that conversation has almost become, I wouldn't say non-existent, but almost shallow, because there are just too many of us to put against each other. You know, there are just too many of us now. And we're doing better than the boys now, you know, in terms of, you know, mainstream visibility, in terms of brand success. I mean, I'm with Puma South Africa. I'm with a champagne brand called Chateau Del Rey. I've got my own businesses. It's just a lot for the guys to take on. And I think what we're seeing, I don't know what it looks like in the United States, but what we're seeing here is that we're balancing out the level, the playing field, because we're working harder than the guys, because we understand that we need to do that to even have a conversation. And it's crazy at how we're not even trying to collaborate all the time with each other. We're not trying to recreate ladies' nights all the time. Although we do have songs like that, it's almost as if we're, you know, putting each other up and saying, you know what, that brand seems like a vibe. I'm going to come through, support you, perform there, tweet about it, post about it, do whatever I need to do to make sure that you exist in that space, because chances are a competing brand is going to get a female like me to also come through and do that. So at the end of the day, we're playing brands, you know, on a higher level, but we both know that we're eating. So I think that's the one thing we've been able to almost decipher, the fact that the more of us, the better, and people start comparing us according to how much we put in rather than who we are. We're seeing a lot of women winning in South Africa. I mean, we've now got Shoma Jozi. She had the song John Cena. We have, you know, Boitsy who's come in. We've had like so many women coming in. And the nice part about it is that we're finally beginning to understand that there's a piece of the pie for everyone. We don't have to go against. I think I've been put against like 12 female artists since I came in, you know, and we've just realized that the power is not in collaborating on one song and making people think that you're all kumbaya and happy. The idea is that we're going to back each other up when it comes to eating, and we're going to eat together. So if a Castle Light comes through and they say, Gigi would like you to, I mean, I opened for the Young MA, I've opened for Meek, I've opened for Posty. Yo, Nadia, can you join me? Can we get on stage together? We don't have to do the same songs, but I can cut my sets in half so that you can, you know, do something, I can do something, and we'll figure out how we work. And you won't believe how many articles come out the next day about how, yo, female rappers are actually a problem in South Africa. And I think that's the narrative we're taking on. The fact that I each according to their capability and not according to who they are.
That is inspiring. And we need to kind of have some of that over here. And like, something I need to rub off over here, because it's all right. So I have lots more questions, but I want to give the students a chance. And I know a couple of the students had some questions.
Are we just allowed to unmute ourselves? Oh, okay. Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about like how your music is received along gender lines and stuff. And I was just wondering if there's any insight on how you feel your music is received in South Africa along racial lines and different things like that.
Along racial lines. I'm gonna be honest and say that I am lucky to have been able to infiltrate into, you know, in South Africa, it's almost like there's the white market and there's the black market. So we have the white radio stations, we have the black radio stations. Obviously collaborations, how people, you know, get used to each other. But the actual, you know, the point is that everything that is white is corporate, and everything that's black in South Africa is government. So that's a bit different to a lot of people. And their realities. But I mean, it's so weird at how, actually, that's a very good question, because it's so weird how we do have, you know, certain members of society in our country actually choose what they want to listen to from Gigi LeMayne. So if there's like Gigi LeMayne and a white artist, because I've done collaborations with people who've done pop, who've done Afrikaans contemporary, who've done, you know, even like religious music, but specifically, you know, towards the white market. But people just like pick and choose. If it's something you want to listen to, then you can listen to it. And because of the different radio stations and the formats we have, then you'll have, you know, the woke Gigi on this one. You have the Gigi's a little lighthearted on this one. And it's almost as if you prepare for your experience. So if you want to listen to this kind of music, we already have that kind of radio station for that, an RSG or a talk radio, whatever. And that's where they're going to play that. Because we play a lot of music, even on talk radio. Or if you just want to like party, that's that. But the realities of, you know, somebody else who isn't black listening to a Fees Must Fall or a Voice of Winnie is like minimal to none. You know, it doesn't exist. The idea of conscious hip hop in South Africa is quoted to non-existence. It lives on the streets. It lives on our government radio stations, because our government happens to be, you know, majority black. That's okay. But when it comes to corporate, you're like remaking a song or you're collaborating with their favorite, I don't know, like guitar, typical, like, you know, Taylor Swift girl, whatever, just to like get the bag. But that's how, as black as I can be, that's how it is in South Africa. So I've been fortunate to like exist in both worlds, and I appreciate both worlds. But I think when the conversation does start, everybody knows that, you know, I'm a young black woman before I'm anything, and I've never compromised on it. So if I'm gonna sit at a table with you, you need to understand that I'm going to have it from my context, whether you like it or not. You know, I mean, there was a song we just did for First for Women, as you had said earlier on, about gender-based violence. And I was the only black girl on the song. And I rapped and I danced and I showcased what it looked like to be young, black, and, you know, whatever it is, the stereotype is. And South Africa, I guess, we're lucky that, you know, people accept it. People won't always like support it, but people definitely just like kind of go with it. But the majority in this country are black people, so it is what it is.
Thank you.
I think Iriana is going to ask a question.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to start off by saying that I really admire your work in music and find it to be really inspirational as someone who also struggles with mental illness, and I've gotten that in your music and found it to be very empowering. I just wanted to ask, how do you think your experience with mental illness enrich your lyrics and music? And what advice would you give to others or someone like me who wants to transform their trauma into art?
All right. Okay. That's a beautiful question. I was diagnosed with severe depression. You know, backtracking, I think it was about my childhood. I grew up in a very abusive background. My father was an alcoholic of nerds. I used to see him beat my mom, you know, and then that translates to school and you have confidence issues and you get bullied and so on and so forth. But I think I was in the 10th grade when I was, you know, at camp somewhere. And we had got this like talent show, like showcase thing that I had to do. And I think that was the first time I actually took back my power. My bullies were there. I was like 15 or something. And I started writing because I was supposed to like create this like quick talent show thing. And after I was done rapping, like everyone was, obviously besides the bullies, but everyone's like, wow, okay, so this girl can actually do this. Because at the time I was this quiet girl, was always reading, always in the library, you know, and people just kind of felt like I was, you know, the easy targets, and I was really small. But I think that was my escape. And, you know, post-depression and finding out, because in the African context, depression is very different. Depression, you're bewitched. So you are like, you're bewitched, is like you've been hexed, like somebody did something to you and you're like a crazy person, or you're sick, you don't deserve to be alive. There are just so many things that go with depression. You're possessed, there are demons in you. And so I'm lucky that my mom is, you know, part of, you know, she's a medical personnel, so she understands how these things work. But to be able to explain it to my family and for it to be exposed into the public was completely different. And at the time, we had had an artist just committed suicide, and we had somebody else immediately after that. And I survived, I guess, because I also went through the whole suicide thing. I was in a coma for a bit. But I remember waking up and thinking, there is a reason why I had to go through that, you know, for my generation, for young people in my context. I was somebody who had seen a lot in society, not just from a feminist full perspective, but from the perspective that I saw my mom work as a single parent to do the most, you know, when my dad just drank and did whatever. And I thought, you know what, this is my story to tell and I need to own it. You know, creating art from it is the tricky bit, because you need to make sure that it doesn't consume you. And I'm at a point where, like, if I can talk about it, like I'm over it. But when you're going through it, the hardest thing to do is pick up a pen, or at least I felt that way. It was really difficult. And I kind of had to just sit in a corner on my own until I came out of it and start writing music. So till this day, there are people who believe that depression is not a real thing in South Africa. You know, mental health is not a real thing. This is somebody who's attention seeking. This is somebody who's, you know, there's so many labels, you know, that were put on me. And I think that's why I came back 10 times harder. I'm doing better than I even did, you know, before then, because it was to prove to people that, look, I'm not sick. This is something I went through. It's as a result of this. This is how you have to break down even the chemical imbalances. And it's crazy at how South Africa is like super non-progressive when it comes to mental health. But from that, I became one of the ambassadors of SADC. That's the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. And it's crazy at how many young people are now coming out. I get DMs every single day about young people saying, look, we need help. We need you to come through. And as a result, we've got something called Mandela Day. 67 minutes you dedicate to doing something special. I usually dedicate the whole day. And I go and I speak to young people in schools who, you know, suffer from some form of anxiety and need help. And, you know, they get assistance with this depression, whatever it is. We try to sort it out, and then we walk them through life as life coaches. So, I mean, for me, everything is a blessing. I've never hidden that, but I'm not going to let that have any power over me, you know? It's a story I need to tell, especially in the African context, where it's like something that's just never heard of and people think you're this or that. And I'm having fun doing it, I guess, because I'm seeing people heal through my story.
Awesome. Aisha, if you can come off mute, I think you have a question as well.
Yes, I do have a question. So Gigi, I would like to say, I think your story is extremely inspiring. I actually lived in Cape Town for 3.5 years. And something that really surprised me there is like whenever I would go to beauty stores, I would just see like shelves and shelves of like skin lightening creams. And it was crazy how accessible it was. And I also saw an article about you that like someone tried to convince you to do that in order to further your career. So how do you think colorism affects just like young women in South Africa on a social level? And then how do you think it affected your career as a whole?
Oh, wow. So this conversation got super heated on social media in South Africa because I was part of the discussion. Another, you know, dark-skinned lady was part of the discussion and two light-skinned ladies were part of the discussion. And they felt that, you know, people were sort of like ganging up against them because they were light-skinned. And the fact is that colorism exists everywhere. You know, we hear stories about young African kids were separated, you know, orphans were separated when it was time for them to take a bath, you know? So the light-skinned kids would bath first and the dark-skinned kids would bath afterwards in the dirty water because, you know, we need to preserve the lightness of these ones. You know, the dark ones doesn't really matter. So we have the whole, you know, house in, field in thing. We have it in South Africa without a doubt. And it's been something that people have avoided for the longest time. But it is something, I mean, we're still, it's so amazing to see people like, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but to see people like a Kendrick or a, you know, there are a few artists that I see now putting dark-skinned women in their videos. And the honest truth is that as South Africans, we adopt a lot of things from you guys, right? And we're still kind of in the light-skinned girl phase at the swimming pool. That's kind of like what looks nice. A rapper needs to have a certain kind of girl on her side. And the dark-skinned woman is deemed angry and upset with society. She just wants to burn everything. And the truth is that we're not like that. I'd like to believe we're not like that. I'd like to believe there's something called a halo effect in psychology, and it plays a part everywhere in the world. And there's nothing we can do as Black people about it, except try to go against it. So in South Africa, we do have a lot of movements that have started coming up. I even feel bad today because I'm wearing my hat. So we call this a hat now. It's no longer a wig or a weave. We call it a hat because it's something that's very temporary. But the cool stuff, I guess, is, you know, what I have underneath. And we're slowly starting to make that shift, you know, into natural hair, into the whole Black is Beautiful thing in the 60s. 70s rather, and into like completely embracing ourselves. You know, we have a Miss Universe was South African, Zozibini Thunzi, and she was dark with, you know, short hair, short natural hair. And a lot of us came out and decided to, I was, you know, one of those people. We came out, cut our hair, and, you know, this is a beautiful thing. So it's slowly starting to seep into society. But the fact is that even in our industry, we've had people admit that because I am lighter, I have gotten further. You know, it's a reality. And, you know, it's amazing to see some people come out and say that because it's not something easy to admit that, you know, Ajiji has been working for so long, but I feel like I've worked, you know, I don't work as hard, but because I look a certain way, I've gotten further. And to the conversation, yes, somebody who was older, who had been in the industry, came to me and she said, you know what, you're like really good. You speak really well. People really like you. But if you were just a shade lighter, I feel like, you know, here's this number, call this, she can work something up for you. There are injections like this and creams like that. And don't use the cheap stuff on the street. Use stuff that'll, you know. So, I mean, I was very angry about it. I believe that a Nina Simone story can, you know, manifest in the South African context. We've seen it with Miriam Makeba. We've seen it with Brenda Fassie. We saw it now with Zozibini. But it's one thing to idealize something and it's one thing to put it into practice because the actual reality is that mainstream still glorifies, you know, the lighter shade, especially when it comes to women. It's exactly, I don't know how it is with you guys, but it's a light woman, that's the best thing, and a dark man, that's kind of, okay, in the African context. If you're a light-skinned man, you're considered, you know, weak, and he can't throw a punch, and he can't protect you, and, you know, it's all these weird things. But that those are the notions around colorism in South Africa, and they're very alive, very, very alive.
So I think we have Ibun has a question, and then I think Haja after that. So Ibun, if you want to come off mute.
Yeah. So I also was wondering, like, where do you see the future of collaboration with other African artists? Like, I know Burna Boy just came out with an album where he collabed with Usain Dor and stuff like that, and that was like new for me because Anglophone countries usually don't collab with like Francophone countries. So like, where do you see the future of that? Like, is language a barrier, or like, what do you think the barriers are?
Africa is coming for everything. Africa is the beginning of everything. It's the end of everything. Even better when you feel like you know Africa, like you want to be Africa. Imbonyi, which is something people don't even know. And I think we had this chat in 2017. Imbonyi was someone who used to recite different things in the 1700s, like different scripts to the king about stuff they'd see and stuff that, and people have alluded that to rap music, you know? So everything has started in Africa. Davido said it very nicely. Come to Africa, eat our food, wear our clothes, speak our languages, feel us, and you'll realize that we are where it began, you know, whether you like it or not. So definitely, because we understand that Africa is next. You know, sensations like Sai, Oppa Gangnam Style and all that kind of stuff. We understand that we have an obligation as Africans to put ourselves out there because the world is looking at us right now. We've got Davido, we've got Wizkid, we've got Burna, Tiwa, so many Nasty C, so many people who are doing amazing things. And yeah, we're collaborating. You know, we're collaborating through DMs. It's not even a management conversation. We simply, like a pick, go into the DMs and say, look, I really like what you're doing. I like that song. Do you think you can get on my album? Like, people will be surprised right now. My album is dropping in July, and there's so many people across Africa that have just emailed, DM'd to want to be a part of it, because for us, it's a project about Africa to the world. It's not just about one artist. And when one person wins, it allows for everyone to experience the spotlight. So we can definitely, like, expect a lot of collaborations. I think the only issue Africans have right now, I mean, with the situation in the United States, is that we find that we're listening to a lot of music, you know, that is foreign, particularly, you know, specifically, you know, American, but we don't see that in America. You know, I mean, we don't see America playing our music. And I think the world and world music we've almost decided that we're going to feature and collaborate with each other until the USA comes to the table. So, I mean, we have seen quite a few collaborations, some of our artists with French Montana, with Meek, with Rick Ross. Rick Ross is a big lover of South Africa. Like, Rick Ross fills up stadiums here. Quite a few, I mean, Beyonce did, wow, Beyonce was amazing. We've got our favorites, and that's because, you know, they come to the table and they sit with us. So it would be great to see, you know, as much as, you know, America is a first world country, it'd be great to see us collaborate more, you know, but there's just this notion that no matter how good you are as an African, you're probably never going to get onto American radio or TV, you know. So we're better off like trying Europe, and, you know, we've got a few Japanese and Asian sort of like collaborations going. But I mean, to be fair, you guys have got the right to feel the way you feel because you guys are just so dope. Everyone kind of like takes stuff from you guys, but it would be great for us to see more of a collaboration between, you know, African, Francophone, as you've mentioned, all these different spaces with actual, you know, American artists. I think that would be a great thing.
Haja, if you want to come off mute.
Hi, can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
All right, cool. As an artist, what advice would you give young girls like myself in terms of, you know, how to get your foot into the door, or like, you know, things to prepare yourself? What advice would you tell us or your younger self?
Be a bitch. Be unapologetic kick down the door. Do not wait for anybody to tell you anything as crazy as that. If you want to take a snake and do a nude shoot, then that's what you're going to do. If you're going to get onto a song and start rapping in tongues, then that's what you're going to do. Unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, the superpower of a woman is that she's, or at least when you become your higher self, you begin not to care. You begin not to seek validation. And it's almost as if the energies around you feel that and they levitate towards you. So for me, it's be unapologetic, kick down the door. A lot of people are going to say, like, what is she doing? A lot of people are going to feel like you're invading their space. A lot of people are going to feel like you're going against culture. So many things. Depends on what your context and what you're going through. But for me, it's about kicking down the door, being unapologetic, and not letting people ride all over you. You know, there was a certain show I did. There was a certain act that was given a certain amount of time. They were an international act. And for me, it didn't make sense because everybody wanted to experience that. And I wanted that act to be able to experience that. And I refused to go on stage until they could give me the right amount of time. And then I went on stage. And it's unbelievable at how now the story had shifted the very next morning when people were writing stories about how, wow, that promoter actually gave that South African artist more time. And people absolutely loved it. That person saw it. Something is happening here. People are working in studio. And so I feel like because I was the person I was, unintentionally, there was just more for me because I was selfish in that point of time, at point of time in time. So for me, it's be selfish, be unapologetic, like be a bitch. Because sometimes that's what they need. Sometimes, especially in the South African context, like it's crazy at how much we go through just on a gender level, you know, and you realize that when you boss up, people have no option but to, you know, to pay up, to look up, to listen up. So yeah.
Oh, I think we have a question coming in. I think this is coming in actually from some of the people from Facebook. And what they're asking is, you mentioned female rappers collaborating and lifting each other up in the craft. What do you think it will take for American female rappers to get on that level? And what advice would you give to Black artists of any medium in America who want to create work that stands against the current political climate, but feel stuck or uninspired due to the current lockdown, the pandemic?
Whoa, okay, so let's start with female rappers in America. Ah, that's a complex one. I honestly believe that is from a business perspective. I think anything that details controversy and catfights is bound to sell. So I think we just need to find a different selling point when it comes to female rappers in America. You know, for us, it's about different things. It's about the fact that Gigi is a lyricist, Rouge makes them dance, Miss Super is, you know, she's seasoned and, you know, she speaks for a certain target market. Everybody almost has their own superpower and we recognize it, and that's why we can coexist. And there's always somebody to keep the peace. So for me, it's about people finding a different way to market themselves. I think we've had the Foxy Kim and then what, like Kim Nikki and then the Nikki Cardi and then the, like, all that. We even know about that. So I think when people decide to think out of the box, then you will find very strange things like Doja Cat's happening. You know, people who just decide, you know, it's whatever. And shout out to Doja Cat. She's actually kind of, you know, South African as well. So for me, it's about finding a different selling point. Eventually people get bored with the beefs, you know, especially with women. Like there's only so much we can do. We actually love each other. It's just, I always feel like there's a little voice, you know, whether it's a producer or a manager, just, yeah, telling you to tweet stuff and just thought stuff, you know, and I'm speaking from experience. And the second question was around, oh, so how you guys can express yourselves. You know, the thing is that's very difficult because with South Africans, we always say there is no revolution without bloodshed and without exile, you know? South Africans are ready to die. Anybody knows that, you know, from apartheid times, P.W. Porter, you know, being killed in our homes, our grandmoms being raped, you know, that is part of saying I'm willing to die if it means I'm to protect the household. And I honestly believe that that's just agency. That's just an individual. Until everyone can get onto a socially cohesive level to be able to allow that for that to happen, there won't be any change, you know? So it's unfortunate, but the actual reality is that you kind of have to just, yeah, be ready to die. We're not afraid of dying. Fees must protests, we were in the front, there was tear gas, there were guns, people got hurt, people got arrested, people died. And for us, it was okay because we understood, you know, according to, you know, one of our Zulu proverbs, there's no revolution without blood and without exile. So, yeah.
That's dope. I think that's all the questions we have.
All right, so I will wrap it up because I know, you know, it's late in SA, so I don't want to, you know, like I said, I had a whole bunch of stuff, but I'm going to save it because when this is over, I'm definitely coming coming back to South Africa. So yeah, hopefully we can do this in person again, because, you know, I never get tired of hearing your music, and stuff that comes out is just, yeah, very strong lyricist, always producing good stuff. So I, you know, hearing that you coming out with something in July, I'm like, you know, really excited to hear that, and that you're gonna, you know, definitely possibly be doing some collaborations on that. And I definitely just, you know, just following up on some of the things that you said, I think it's important you noting that, pointing out that on the continent, the way people see mental health and depression is very, very different. And it was interesting because in South Africa, there was the HHP, Hip Hop Phansula, who, when he committed suicide, it was kind of, you know, even then I feel like there wasn't that wake up call. People still didn't, you know, have that. And so, you know, I definitely think that being here to kind of talk about that and kind of still be present to have that discussion is really, really important. So I want to thank you for coming out. And, you know, we're definitely going to have this up on the Hip Hop African Podcast website and blog and all that stuff. And we're going to have, you know, all your socials and all of that stuff. We want to thank you for coming out. Or for being up, not coming out, for being up.
Absolutely. It's like, yeah, it's 106, yeah. Yeah. It's 106, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I think it's been a very fruitful conversation, but I will say to you guys, like, you have no idea how in the forefront you guys are, you know, specifically people of color in the United States of America. I don't think you guys understand how much the rest of the world looks to you to fight and change a lot of things. Not because we think you're in a place of privilege, but because we understand what you guys have done in so many revolutions over and over again, you know, along the years. So kudos to you guys, but I just think I would really love to see a lot more aggression towards, you know, Black Lives Matter, because we're all with you, the whole world. Everything stopped. Every time you guys have something to say, every time there is a death, every time there is a protest, you guys are trending in South Africa as well. And the sooner you guys understand that you guys have an army in Africa, there is nothing that you guys can't do. You've got brothers and sisters in us. We will always be here. We look to you guys, you know, for guidance, We look to you guys, you know, to be able to navigate around the situations you have, because we learn from each other. So as long as you guys understand that we're only separated by borders and some weird sea, but when you call on us, we are here for you. The nice thing is it's not even, you know, physical. On a viral level, you call on us, we're here for you. We see everything you guys do, but understand that your pain is ours. Take the forefront, do what you guys need to do. Take back your power in whatever way you guys need to. Just know that Africa's always here and we have your back.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And good luck with everything. I know you guys are fighting your own COVID battles there as well. So it's kind of like a global thing. Yeah. All right. Thanks. She wouldn't hurt nobody. Do it for her children, she don't nobody. My people, they're screaming, you need to free us alive. And yo, we hungry for victory, rather fight till we die. Let Tambulu mama suga, mama weenie, that's it. So many women inventing, they lit the match to your split. They got amnesia and ish, we carry children and ish. They won't admit we should be naming martyrs, sheroes and ish. Instead they put us at each other, Twitter beefing and ish. I'm here for unity, sis, Oprah, I'm handing out this. The voice of Vinny. She bite too strong, hurt too much, she go cry this song. The voice of Winnie.